We begin today with the assaults on Indian students in Melbourne. Both state and federal governments are clearly taking the incidents more seriously. There's now a task force headed by the National Security Advisor Duncan Lewis and some new measures in Victoria. It's also been reported that the Chinese government is concerned about the safety of 130,000 Chinese students in Australia. So this could get more complicated. But it seems to me the first thing to do is to find out how Indian students in Melbourne are feeling at the moment. And Sunmati Verma, an Indian law student and activist at Melbourne Uni, joins me now. Welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, thanks very much, Richard.
What is the feeling like on campus?
I think it's pretty safe to say that the feeling is still fairly volatile. Reports are still being funneled back to us from the Indian media, who I think maintain an active presence here. And the latest report that I heard was from NDTV, one of India's major television channels, and an email was sent around that they were reporting another attack at Newport of two students, and that was probably at about 1 o'clock last night, so the news coverage is still coming through to us. And I think people are also left a little bit dismayed by the policy outcomes that are coming out of this subsequent discussion.
Well, yes.
And I'd heard that up until yesterday that phone lines had been absolutely jammed between specifically Punjab in India's north and Australia because parents were just trying to get through and confirm the safety of their kids here. So I think definitely the debate seems to be live and raging in India, and it's getting funneled back through sort of this feedback process of people in India and students here.
Okay, so well, a lot to kind of follow up there. You're saying essentially the Indian media is now ahead of the Australian media on this.
If I can be frank with you, I think the Indian media has always been that step ahead because they came here to follow up the details of the Glenn Roy attacks, the screwdriver attack against Shravan Tirtla, who's now still in hospital, when the coverage in the local mainstream media had been a throwaway one or two lines. The Indian media, and specifically NDTV, were splashing it all over their headlines. So I think they've always been a step ahead, and I think students are definitely, you know, more likely to talk to Indian media because it's firstly their language, and secondly because the coverage is absolutely guaranteed and there's no risk that your story will be partially covered and then let to drop the next day.
Yeah, I suppose some sense in that. I'm speaking as somebody who's been in the media for 20 years. this is a great story for the Indian media.
Acknowledging that kind of leads us down some really cynical channels about the Indian media's desire to be involved on such a level with an issue like this. I think definitely there's probably something to say for the statement that, you know, the Indian media directly following the sort of general elections was probably looking for a bit of a story. But I think their commitment to the issue and the very fact that around seven channels have had their people on site here for so long also speaks to the commitment that various Indian sources have to getting good quality coverage on the issue, and I don't think they're leaving that to local media anymore.
All right. Let's talk about essentially, because you said you've been disappointed in some of the outcomes.
Yes.
What about things like travelling? Because as I understand it, have you been advised to stay away from public transport? Is that right?
I've been advised by some very kindly and concerned friends of mine who are specifically taxi drivers to definitely try and stay away from public transport. I think that advice was even beginning to permeate the crowd at the protest itself. I mean, when I went off for a short dinner at about 8 or 9, and when I came back, there was probably a crowd of maybe 80 guys who had freshly arrived at the protest and who had been travelling on train. And they were reporting having been pushed around and interrogated about where they were heading and whether they were heading to the protest on the trains that very night. So, yeah, I've been avoiding public transport for the past couple of days just because I don't think, I mean, if there's any remote possibility of a racist attack, I don't think at this stage anyone would bother to ask too many questions about, you know, my lineage and how long I had been here. I think
Right. Being
and looking Indian would be enough.
So, as I understand it, though, John Brumby, the Premier, has moved to put security guards on trains. How much will this help?
That's what's done in Sydney, and apparently there are some statistics circulating about how that's assisted late-night crime on Sydney's trains. I think it's definitely one step. having security guards on the actual trains is going to prevent what happened, I guess, to Saurabh Sharma, hopefully, but it won't prevent what's happening to other victims. For example, if this report about the Newport assault is accurate, where guys have kind of alighted from the train and then stepped away from the station a little bit, and the second that they're outside of any patrolled sort of area, they're being assaulted by people, it's not really going to prevent those issues, and it's not going to prevent broader issues about Indian security in Melbourne, I don't think.
On Life Matters today, my guest is Sonmati Verma. She's an Indian law student activist at the University of Melbourne. We are talking about, well, the incidents in Melbourne, assaults on Indian university students. A new task force met yesterday. It's headed by the National Security Advisor, Duncan Lewis. What has come out of that?
To my knowledge, very frankly, nothing, not a lot at this stage. I haven't received any sort of reports internally from about what's come from that, and I don't think there's been any public statement. I'm not even really sure what their specific mandate for discussion was. Perhaps it was the suggestions to sort of change, I think the Federation of Indian Students has been suggesting changing the complexion of some of the task forces and police forces to include an Indian presence. I'm not sure whether that was their mandate, but I'm not seeing a lot of results from that at this stage.
All right. Well, what would you like to see the state government and perhaps the Victorian police do that they're not doing now?
Can I make a little bit of a broad and diffuse sort of comment about where I'd like the debate to go, or would you like to focus on Victoria Police?
Well, if you want to make a broader comment, we can come back to it.
Okay. There's been another assault as of Monday night, I believe, against a student who was studying at Chisholm TAFE. And the opportunism label came up again, and sort of, you know, presumptively the police, you know, who were involved sort of shut down any idea that there was a race element to the attacks and said, look, this is an opportunistic attack. And frankly, I'd like to see the debate progress so we can begin to interrogate what creates the opportunity for Indian students to be assaulted in the way that they are, what creates the vulnerability, which is in fact the particular work and living conditions that Indian students have that are created by the very conditions of their visas and the, you know, training organisations that they work with.
So they're taking jobs in convenience stores or taxis at night, and they're in more vulnerable positions, essentially.
Absolutely. More broadly than that, Indian students are taking jobs that are characterised by vulnerability, and they're characterised by, you know, sort of very, very, very precarious working situations that lead them, you know, to be on trains at 1 o'clock in the morning, at 2 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, renders them visible in this particular way and renders them vulnerable. And I'd like there to be this discussion, I guess, about those conditions and perhaps altering student visa conditions so that the 20-hour work limit that's part and parcel of student working conditions here is up for interrogation again, because that hasn't been on the agenda since 1991. And at that stage, we had only 60,000 international students here. So in terms of what Victoria Police can do, I guess once and for all, acknowledging that in the mind of a lot of protesters, the race debate is sort of over, that acknowledging the racial elements of attacks and working through and processing that, and then perhaps moving the debate to a more mature territory and questioning what it is that creates Indian student vulnerability in the first place is something that I would like to see happen.
Just very briefly, because we have to move on. But
sure.
Sonmati, what's been your own experience? Have you been hurt or felt threatened or been racially vilified?
Are we talking over the past few days?
Well, since you've been here.
I have a habit of travelling very late night on trains as well, because I also, not in any Indian international student capacity, but I worked for many years at a call centre in the city. And my experience of travelling home to Taylor's Lakes in Melbourne's West was quite a harrowing one. And I have experienced vilification on trains, and it's not a particularly pleasant experience. And I'm someone who also has the insulation of being established here and being able to speak English and being very forthright about my rights. And if I can experience vilification in public places like that and feel threatened about my presence in the public sphere, I can only imagine how Indian students are feeling in that same position.
Sonmati, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks very much, Richard.
Sonmati Verma is a law student and activist at the University of Melbourne. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. Richard Adie with you. Clearly, the police can do things, and the government can work too on improving security for international students. But if the attacks are ethnically or racially motivated, then this issue has to be tackled in the community. And you're about to hear one way that universities and communities can work together to foster better understanding and acceptance. Gillian Vogels at the Centre for Research on Social Inclusion at Macquarie University in Sydney. She's on the line. Hello, Gillian.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You've initiated a program to do this, to improve the lives of international students. This was in Wollongong.
That's right. Yeah, the program actually came about as a response to research that I've been doing with Peter Kell in the education faculty about racism on campus towards international students and in the broader community, and then because we were called to a meeting about increased reports towards racism. And so what we did is got some funding through the University of Wollongong and then also through an IMB Community Foundation grant, and we put together a community working group. And what we found when we talked to lots of people in the community, representatives of community organisations, is they had very little idea of how many international students were studying at the university and what issues international students were facing. So a lot of the ideas people were getting from international students were coming from the media. And often what Peter and I found is that the media tends to either sort of talk about international students in terms of statistics, how much money they're bringing into the country, where they come from, or otherwise in a very negative way about being, you know, responsible for low academic standards, competing with domestic students for university places and local jobs. And so what we wanted to do basically is to create some sort of community awareness of the incredible cultural contribution that international students make towards the host communities while they're living and studying in Australia, and to try and create greater connections between international students and the broader community. So
it's a sort of two-way process. You're raising awareness for both within the international students' ranks and within the communities in which they live.
That's right, yes, because a lot of students, you know, the websites tell students that they're going to come to Australia and Australians are very friendly and they're going to mix easily, and and while some students did have very positive experiences, others didn't find that this was their experience at all. And through the research that Peter and Kel and I did, is we found that, you know, many students report incidences of racism and threats to their safety. So, for example, a Chinese student was robbed twice at knife point, so it was trying to sort of create some sort of awareness in the community and sort of respond to this racism. And one of the sort of offshoots of this program also was international students, and it was done through a program called Momentum at Wollongong University. International students actually going into the schools and talking to school students to try and undermine some of the stereotypes about international students.
So going into schools, that's one thing. What other examples?
That was one thing. The other thing what the community working group decided to do was to have a civic reception, and I know some other universities have done it, to provide some sort of symbolic welcome that international students are welcome in Wollongong. And also we had a community festival for international students. So, and this was done out in the mall, so that you know, the community could become more aware of the international student population. And that seemed to, from the surveys that we hand our surveys to international students and domestic students and people in the community, and community members sort of felt that they became a lot more aware of the issues that international students face. And international students said that the festival and the civic reception had definitely made them feel more included and welcome in the community.
And was there less racial vilification or racially based attacks because of it?
Well, you know, I think it helped a bit. It's made a bit of a difference. But I also, like, having said all this, I mean, while these community programs work, obviously they have to be coupled very much at a much broader level with, I think, much more sort of responsible media portrayal of international students, and also with a commitment by governments and, you know, governments and universities to provide a safe, you know, to look after, nurture and provide, make sure that the international students' well-being is looked after. So I do think it makes a difference, and I think they're important, but as I said, it needs to be coupled at a much wider level with other strategies.
Now, you're at Macquarie now.
I'm at Macquarie now, yes.
Which is a pretty diverse student population.
It is, yes.
What is your university doing to make them feel safer and happier?
I haven't done a lot of research, but we're just beginning to, with my colleague, Dr. Goldie Ashuri. We're sort of talking now about running some focus groups with international students at Macquarie University, and we're exploring avenues to find some sort of funding to put in place a similar project that was put in place at Wollongong University. And this project's actually continued now since I've left. And they're in their third year now, and I think they've just won an award for it. So.
Okay. Thanks very much for joining us today, Gillian.
Okay, thank you.
That's Dr. Gillian Vogel. She's a research fellow at the Centre for Research on Social Inclusion at Macquarie University. Keen to hear from you on this, especially if you're an international student. What sort of experience have you been having in Australia? Get in touch, abc.net.au/rn/lifematters, or give us a ring on 02 833 1430. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National, and you're with Richard Adie.